Hey guys, what's up?
Hi.
Hi.
Oh my gosh.
It's a new show. It's a new.
This is an opening for. We have a guest waiting.
Yeah, we got a guest. We're going to do the whole thing, and people are settling in. They're starting their jog. They're starting their drive. They're getting into the hot tub down in Australia. Yeah, I know you.
Some finger sandwiches.
What do you think? You think more people listen to us in the car or while they're exercising?
That is a great question. We should do a poll.
Yeah. I wonder. When I'm exercising, I got to be watching TV.
Hang on 1 second, Jason. This is an all-new SmartLess.
Smart.
Sean, are you aware of the damage that blue light can do to your eyes, like these blue blocker glasses?
Are you talking about the computer light, like at night or something?
Correct. Bennett and Rob have blue light blue blockers on,
and I didn't know that was.
Yes, I have glasses that my kids wear sometimes when they're on their screens.
I bought it for our kids too, and I just don't know, or Amanda did, and
not our kids. We don't have kids together.
Yeah, I keep trying to tell you that, and you just keep denying it.
No, we don't.
But wait a minute, is it really true? Because I had a doctor friend of mine say that, like, don't look at the laptop when you're in bed or the phone because it's supposed to keep you up, or it doesn't, it makes me fall asleep.
We'll see, but Rob just told me that it drains you. So does it just make you tired? Does it keep you up? Does it destroy your eyes?
You should not look at a screen like at least 30 minutes before you go to bed. It affects your sleep because it has to do with brain activity. Although you guys should be okay.
You're not teeing yourself up for an online porn
joke.
No,
I'm just thinking that we're not going to see a lot of brain activity. If we have haven't seen any yet. It's not like we're going to all of a sudden see a surge. You know what I mean?
Well, maybe I had too much blue light when I was a kid.
That could be it.
You know, maybe that's a problem.
Something. What time do you guys go to bed?
I need better sleep hygiene. I need to start going to bed at 10:30.
Your sleep hygiene is disgusting.
But what does that mean? What, you sleep dirty? What do you...
No, sleep hygiene is just making sure you sleep better, like you have a better...
Your sleep routine. It's called sleep hygiene.
What do you guys sleep in? You guys sleep in, Sean, you sleep in pajamas and one of those kind of like cone pajama hats with a little tassel at the end?
With the feeties?
Like the night before Christmas.
With a candle. I carry my candle to bed.
With a hand in front of it so the wind doesn't blow.
Sean looks like a TV, he looks like a TV husband from the 90s in like pajama bottoms and a nondescript t-shirt.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah. Kids, let's shut those lights out. We're a half hour past your bedtime.
No, you're supposed to. By the way, this is what I read. Between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. is when the best sleep is supposed to happen. Mm-hmm. I don't know how your body knows the hour time, but that's what I heard.
This sounds like a weird website.
Well, you know, according to Folgers, the best part
of waking up.
Yeah. For real though, what time do you go to? I want to get to our guest because we have an incredible guest who's being very patient.
Well,
but
we'll see.
Jason, what time do you go to bed?
I go to bed at probably no later than 10:30. And that's when it's really gotten away from me.
Sean?
Okay, so wait, listen, just because you said that, when I did the Kenny Rogers Christmas tour, he sang.
I have all the time in the world for this.
Make this a long one.
And Kenny used to sing, Christmas in America, the sweetest time of year, right?
Yeah. Yep.
We'd be backstage and he would go, Christmas in America. And we would go, is Folgers in your cup?
he was right though. Kenny was right.
Here it comes.
Islands in the Stream. That is what we are.
You know who wrote that song?
Dolly Parton.
Nope. The Bee Gees.
Jennifer Warren. The Bee Gees.
Yeah.
Oh, glad we've got some extra openers.
I realized that I would describe our guest as an island in the stream. This person is a true Eddie.
Brooke Shields.
Of
Chita Rivera.
No.
Chris Atkins.
No.
Are we not guessing?
Well, it's not just the cast of the Blue Lagoon, man. Guest is a multi-hyphenate, just a multi-talented person who I first became aware of in a film from the early 2000s that was very popular at the time. It was directed by a guy called David Wayne. It was a movie called Wet Hot American Summer. Oh. She then went on to play in a million movies, some of the biggest hits, but then became an incredible director. I got to know her during the Lego movies, really got to know her. And then she went on and started directing. She directed what is now the biggest gross opening ever for a first-time director with Pitch Perfect 2.
Oh!
This person
this is Elizabeth Banks.
This is Elizabeth Banks,
everybody. Oh, woo-hoo! There she is. Woo! Oh, my God.
No, not a lot of people know this, but you are the wife of David Cross. We just learned on our episode David.
Do you guys remember that?
I was just listening to the David Cross episode. He said that his wife, who I think, Sean, you asked him who he's married to.
Who are you married to? And he said, Elizabeth Banks.
Yes. That's true. Actually, David Cross and I are husband and wife.
Wow.
It's not legal. It's not a legal thing.
It's not legal.
No.
Look at the lizard. Haven't seen
What's
you for
that?
A long time.
You guys, I'm sorry. I'm such a disappointment after you're hoping Brooke Shields shows up.
Well, listen.
It's just me, guys.
We have love for everybody.
I'm so happy you're here. You're one of those people, I always feel like when I see you, you make me smile. I'm always happy to see you.
Aww.
It's true.
And you're also one of those rare finds in Hollywood, a girl who's absolutely unbelievably hilarious and unbelievably gorgeous at the same time.
I love that you're calling me a girl, Sean, the greatest compliment that you could be paying me.
And listener, this is the first time I think anybody's ever worn something halfway decent to do. She's got a very nice blouse on. She's combed her hair.
This was not for you guys. I'm going to be totally honest. I had to do another thing before this. Oh. I wish I was in my pajamas.
Like these?
My footed pajamas.
What was the thing? Can you say?
I was doing a panel with Stacey Snyder, who's another big wig in our business.
Sure. Uh-huh. Sure.
We both went to the same university and we did a panel for an alumni thing.
For Penn. You went to University of Pennsylvania.
Will Arnett.
It's an Ivy League school.
Yeah.
I did. I went to Penn. Yes. I went to Penn in Philadelphia. And so did Stacey Snyder. And so did a bunch of Hollywood types. And Stacey and
you graduated with honors, did you not?
I did.
Oh, who's done some research? Will found the Wikipedia page.
Tell
on
us
Liz
what
Banks.
You come on, tell us.
Will. Will's on the wiki.
No, I don't wiki. Magna cum laude, maybe?
That's true. Those are some Latin words that are
incredible?
On my degree. Yes, they are.
Was your degree in theater or?
It was in communications and also theater arts. But the school, they're not a big theater arts program at Penn.
Can I ask a question here? Because I did not go to college.
This is going to be great.
This is going to come as a surprise to a lot of people.
By the way, this,
I don't
this question,
have a
Elizabeth
degree.
Is so
or, yeah. Here it is. This is a good, dumb question from a good, dumb guy. Mm-hmm. How hard is college?
What an episode. Thanks for joining us.
I do mean it. Now, from what I understand,
This is not a bit.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. First of all, I didn't even graduate high school.
I dropped out of college, it should be noted.
But it's my understanding that there are 2 years of general ed, right, which is sort of the college level history, college level English, college level math. That's for 2 years, which sounds like a nightmare. Okay. And then the last 2 years, this is my understanding, is that you get to study your minor and your major. So, you know, I want to become a roofer or I want to become, whatever the hell it is. I'm just saying you can pick whatever occupation you want and study your nards off about it. And so that sounds fun. But those first 2 years sound really difficult. Is that the way it goes?
Not really. I mean,
no.
What?
How do you?
What?
Yeah, how do you even answer that question?
Let me say something.
Sleep right before this.
I'm kind of with Jason because you know this long kind of idea about is college necessary? You know, does anybody really need
additional
to go to college
voluntary school? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Here's what I learned, guys. I learned about what kind of alcohol I liked.
See,
I learned about drug use.
Yeah.
I learned how to get into a club in Philly, which was, and I learned about, I went to my first jazz club, which was amazing. This like underground jazz club in Philadelphia. Uh-huh. That's the stuff that mattered. That's why I met my husband.
Sweet, sweet Max.
You know?
Well, that's good.
I liked college because.
With the arts, I have a scholarship set up at the Illinois State University where I went for theater.
Hang on a second.
College graduate, Sean Hayes.
Thank you. Well, I didn't. I got an honorary doctorate, but I never graduated. But I think it's important for the arts because it's where everybody gathers for the first time to really kind of become vulnerable and learn from each other and grow and figure out where your place is in the field of theater and arts.
It's a lot
of
that.
This is where I'm coming from. Like, you can't fail in college, right? Like, it's only you can learn as much as you apply yourself to learn.
That's
but there's
right.
there's no obligation to score a certain number on a certain number of tests like high school.
No, it's all self-imposed. That's
right.
The greatest
okay.
part about it, right? So
sounds
everything
good.
Is self-imposed. Yeah. I think that's maybe everything in life. I mean, other than like you have to pay some bills. Uh-huh. So you have to make some money to pay bills, but like really so much of this pressure on ourselves is all self-imposed.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Western Massachusetts, in Pittsfield. Massachusetts.
Okay. Pittsfield, Massachusetts. By the way, how many people from your high school went to Penn?
Just me. I don't know. Maybe a couple other people eventually went there.
Sure. somebody's not a real overachiever.
I went to public high school, guys.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
in a small town where we literally went into the fields and tipped cows when we drank too many beers.
Are you going to want your kids to be academics like you? Or are you going to say, yeah, no, it's not that big a deal. You just learned how to get into clubs and go to like jazz functions.
Well, I mean, I did learn some cool things too. I mean, I've never studied certain, you know, I picked up a love for learning things. And I had access, you know, I really felt lucky to have the access I had to the amazing professors that I, you know, got to learn from. And some of them were total assholes. I remember this one professor who was, you know, just laid things that like I needed to miss a class for a family thing. And I love my family. And she was like, too bad. You're in college now. Like, you're over 18 and you don't get to either this or that. And I remember having to make that kind of decision for the first time. I chose my family.
She was right.
And she nicked my grade. And it was like, wow, okay, I'm an adult.
I got to say, and I think the world of you, but I'm on her side.
You made a bad decision.
Because I think we live in a world where there's too much of that, like, especially in our business, of like, I got to go visit, like, too fucking bad.
Too bad. No special, you don't get a special dispensation because you, like, have a loving family. F off.
Did you go back to Massachusetts after college or did you go straight to L.A.?
I did not go straight to L.A. I did more fucking school.
She went and got her BFA.
I did more school. MFA. I got a master's
MFA,
in fine
sorry,
arts.
Sorry.
Thank
oh,
you.
Oh, sorry. You got
I had
a master's?
BA and I have an MFA. Yeah, I went to drama school. And honestly, I went to drama school partially because I thought maybe I wanted to be an actor. But where I'm from, nobody is an artist. That's not a career. That's not something anybody does.
Well,
and
that's not true. Fucking some beer artists. We got some fucking beer artists.
There's a lot of that. You're absolutely right. However, I remember, you just remind me of something. I went to an event in Massachusetts not that long ago, and this guy got up with the Mass accent, and he was like, this is Elizabeth Banks. She, in my high school, if you were a little different, maybe you went to the arts. You know, you did some arts. Like the different kids
different.
Did the ads.
Yeah, sure, uh-huh. Different. Yeah.
They did the ads. Anyway, so I was in the ads. But that was not something you did where I'm from.
But if you got a master's in drama school, does that mean that you thought, okay, I might be an actor, but if I am an actor, it's going to be like a serious dramatic actor? Was comedy even on your radar?
Comedy was on my radar, but the degree was because I didn't know how to go to New York City and get an act. I didn't understand what was step one. I'm not even kidding you.
Right.
It was
I'm with you on
a
that.
A lot of people don't
so
know.
So I show up and I get a job as a waitress and then what happens?
Yeah, where do I go? Yeah.
Is there an office or a phone number that you call? Like,
hi,
you
I want to be an actor.
Backstage. Yeah. Yeah, like you go to the open calls and backstage.
So what
something.
Did you do? So how did you find out?
Yeah, tell us how it works.
I didn't have to do any of that because I went to drama school. And when you go to drama school, they do a showcase and you meet agents and then they call you and they go, do you want me to represent you? And I go, yes, please. And then you start acting like the next day. And literally that is what happened.
Wow. Gotcha. So you went on auditions and you just started booking stuff.
My very first day, so I did my showcase and the next morning I got asked to audition for a soap. I think it was As the World Turns. Mm-hmm. And then that afternoon they called and said, do you want to be on this soap opera for 2 years? And I had not even graduated ACT yet.
And you did it?
I did not do it.
Oh, no. What?
I didn't do it.
What do you mean?
And
she's Liz fucking Banks, man. And
in her first day, she gets a 2-year gig and turns it down. Yeah. Based
that,
on what?
Based on part of it. A few things. One, I wanted to finish school. They were like, come tomorrow. Like, you're on this show tomorrow. I now know, as I've spent a long time in the business, I produce things, you make things, I cast a lot of things. And sometimes they're just looking for the person. And if you walk in and solve it, you're literally hired and you show up the next day, right? That just happens every once in a while. So that's what happened. They had been looking for somebody to play this role for a couple weeks. And then I happened to walk in the door and they were like, it's going to be you. And I said, actually,
it's not
going to be me. And I remember I was on a payphone, because that's how old we all are. I was on a payphone in New York City, up by Lincoln Center. I called my mom. I had massive student loans, like major. And I called my mother and I said, they offered me this job. And I turned it down. It was $250,000 for 2 years. This is more money than I had ever seen in my entire life. And it would have paid everything. Wow. And like, it was, And I said, I'm not going to do it. And I burst into tears because I thought, I knew it was the right decision, but I was really scared not to have money because I was eating like a bagel a day.
But wait a minute. But I'm sorry. I may have missed it. Why? What was the main reason you turned it down?
To stay in school?
I wanted to finish school, but more than anything, I'm not kidding. I thought to myself, if I can get a soap on day one, what can I get on day two?
Goddamn, that's Western Mass.
I'm not even kidding.
That is some hardcore shit. Yeah, fucking A.
Fucking hardcore.
And then how long was it before your next offer?
I got a commercial like a week later.
Wow.
Oh, good. Good.
Yeah. So you just came
and
out.
I signed with the one agent who said to me, like, no, don't take that job. Like, I think because I didn't know anything about the business either. So remember, I went to New York, did a showcase from drama school thinking I'm going to be like a chorus girl on Broadway.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
my dream.
My dream was not to
my
be.
Dream.
Sean's dream. I wanted Sean's dream too. And so when I got offered a soap opera, which was not my dream, but it was just like an amazing money job and a foray into New York and all that. But it wasn't my dream. And I thought, oh, wait, I don't think that's what I want to do. And at the time, everybody was doing, remember like Scream was like the big movie.
Oh,
I remember
yeah.
Party of Five was on.
Yeah.
Like, sure. Neve Campbell was like my like dream.
Sure. Is it? Yeah.
And I remember thinking, I don't need to do this soap opera. Like, I actually do want to keep pursuing the things that I want to do. And maybe I'll be on Broadway and maybe I'll... And then the commercial world was also something I knew nothing about.
But you could make a lot of money in commercials in those days.
And I did. I paid off all my student loans with commercial work.
No way.
Will Arnett would have been fine too. Because how many goddamn commercials do you record in that booth of yours right there?
A lot. A lot. Well, I graduated from No More Drama School. You know what I'm talking about?
How you doing?
How you doing? I'm doing fine.
Sorry, don't mean to interrupt, but just don't know if I forgot to mention that this podcast is sponsored by Faherty.
Jason.
Yeah.
I know how you want to look like you're not trying too hard when you get dressed, but deep down inside, you're full of tears.
Yeah.
And you really do care about how you look.
It's true.
And, you know, you just want to look cool. Like you didn't try at all. Like you just woke up like this.
Where are you going with this?
I learned your secret because I think you're wearing Faherty. Faherty makes the perfect clothes for summer. Vintage looking button down shirts and these shorts they call the all day shorts because you can literally wear them all day. Okay, they take you from the beach, the boardroom, to the bar, to the bedroom, and they just keep you looking fresh, even in the bedroom. Did I mention the bedroom? And you can do anything in them, even in the bedroom. I mean, who knows what the hell Jason is doing all day in the bedroom? He's probably out there in the link, just stuck in a sand trap, or he's in the bedroom, but still looking good in those all-day shorts in the bedroom.
Yep.
Faherty was founded by twin brothers who set out to make the highest quality clothes out there, pairing natural and recycled materials with modern-day performance touches.
You know how you were complimenting me on my new linen shirt and the hoodie that I wore the other day?
Yeah.
Now, all that, Faherty.
I mean, it's just, I gotta say,
crazy.
You're a handsome guy, and I guess I do have to thank you for something because Faherty is now giving all our SmartList listener 20% off. 20% off.
You're welcome.
With the code SMARTLESS at checkout.
So stock up. Stock up on your clothes for summer. Head to FaritiBrand.com. Use the promo code SMARTLESS and check out for 20% off. FaritiBrand.com, promo code SMARTLESS.
This episode is sponsored by CBDMD. Wow, it's hot, isn't it? The highways are packed. Even the sunniest days hold the potential for random thunderstorms. Yeah, that's right. Summer is back. But just because you probably don't get a two-month summer vacation anymore doesn't mean you can't take full advantage of the season. And thanks to our good friends at CBDMD and their limited edition coconut tincture, you can truly kick back, relax, and make this the summer of you. The limited edition coconut tincture blends the superior broad spectrum formula you know and love from CBDMD with a sweet and tropical coconut flavor. Yum. Doing this podcast is super fun, right? But I'm hunched over in front of the microphone all the time. So in doing so, my traps and my shoulders get a little hurt, you know? So I rub some CBDMD stuff on there and it's kind of amazing and it makes it all go away. And with that tropical coconut flavor, I kind of feel like it goes away while I'm at the beach. And to make it even easier to celebrate this summer of you, they're offering all our listeners 25% off your next order when you use the promo code SMARTLESS at checkout. Once again, that's CBDMD.com, promo code SMARTLESS for 25% off your purchase of superior CBD products only from CBDMD.
SMARTLESS is sponsored by Pete and Jerry's.
Listener, I know it can be difficult and confusing to choose the right eggs, right? Am I right? But our sponsor, Pete and Jerry's Organic Eggs, they take the guesswork out of buying eggs with their best-in-class organic farming practices paired with the highest animal welfare standards.
And you know, all Pete and Jerry's eggs are organic and certified humane free range. And that takes a lot of eggs to do that.
Sure, yeah. No, they are a pioneer and leader in the egg industry. They have been organic egg farming for nearly 25 years. And in 2003, they became the first certified humane egg farm in the U.S. Well,
these eggs are incredible because they have all the things that, you know, they're the best quality egg you can buy at the store because they're rich and they have creamy flavor and they're, you know, deep golden yolks. And they have a bunch of stuff that you'll like too, Jason. They're firm, you know, with harder, stronger shells.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah.
Right now, Pete and Jerry's is giving away a free dozen eggs to the first 150 listeners who go to PeteandJerry's.com/SMARTLESS.
Pete and Jerry's organic eggs are available nationwide at a fine grocer near you.
And now back to the show.
What were those first couple of years in New York like? Being a waitress and going from audition to audition and trying to like have a social life too. Was that easy for you? Or
I loved every second of it.
Yeah.
I did not sleep. So my first summer after drama school, I moved to New York, and I was a waitress at Prohibition on 84th and Columbus on the Upper West Side.
Yeah.
And I did some bartending there as well. And I worked with this woman named Bonnie. Bonnie was, she was studying to be a flight attendant. She was like an ex-model.
She flies over the ocean.
How do you study?
You have to go to like the school, like the Delta school in Texas and learn how to be a flight attendant.
Huh.
So Bonnie had a bunch of animals.
Sure.
I never understood anyone who had a pet in New York City, but whatever. So she had a bunch of animals. She had like a dog and a cat and a bird or something.
Oy.
And she started going away and she had a boyfriend that she would stay at. And so she said, you can move into and live in my studio apartment with these three animals and watch my animals. Mm-hmm. And we'll when she is back. So there's a bed and a couch. And if she was in town, she got the bed and I got the couch. But if she was flying, like doing her overnights, then I got the bed. And then after a while, we just were like, let's just both sleep in the bed. And so the main thing that people like to hear about my time.
Let's just film it. How long is it before? Let's just film it. When did that
happen?
Sorry.
I was literally sleeping in a bed with Bonnie, the bartender / flight attendant ex-model,
right,
and her dog. And we would just sleep in a bed together on 101st and Columbus.
And
that was my life for like 6 months. And then my now husband moved back to New York and we moved in together. Anyway, so those are my days. I lived with a flight attendant. I was a bartender and a waitress. I went on my auditions. I had a roller bag that I would carry around because, you know, and by the way, I walked around in heels back then. This was like Sex and the City time. So you felt like not you weren't a real woman if you couldn't walk New York City streets in high heels. Sure. So I walked around in high heels and I had all my changes, all my clothes, my changes for my auditions because I had auditioned for a doctor and then I auditioned for a lawyer. And oh then I auditioned God. For
and your headshot, you know. Your headshot was in four quadrants. They may have had each one of those.
This is like what, like 97, 98, 99 yep, all in there?
Exactly. Yep.
Did you ever see me like rollerblading by? Did you ever see me rollerblading?
Oh my God, I totally rollerbladed. I went to Central Park and like did the rollerblading thing.
Oh, me too. Oh, yeah, well, I played hockey and I would rollerblade uptown and then I'd go by and then if I'd see some, you know, a girl on a street corner, I'd kind of slow down like she is paying attention to the guy on the rollerblades.
So what do you do? Wait, hang on a sec. Well, let me paint this picture here. So you got a hard look there, like there's a bunch of smoke in the room, right? Yeah. So the eyes are real tight. And then you're dragging one of your skates behind you to slow down a little bit.
Smoking a butt. And then doing that thing where I look out and I just go, and just answering to a question that was not asked, and I just go, probably.
Oh, God. And so would you have a plastic hockey stick sticking out of your backpack, too? Yeah, just
real
a
hockey
catch,
stick.
Right?
Let's get back to Elizabeth. So,
hey, Elizabeth.
So you're doing all this. You're doing a ton of commercial stuff. You're doing... Yes. I mean, you're killing it in the commercial world. You pay off your student loans.
Yeah.
Best feeling in the world.
I paid off a student loan with like one Crest White Strips commercial.
Wow.
Back in the day. Great. These big honking teeth. I have chiclets for teeth. They're ginormous. And right, I used to really dislike my teeth. And now, but they paid off a lot of student loans.
Grass is always green.
They're very all American, these teeth. They
Jason,
sell a lot
Jason
of things.
Did a Crest one too, the before shot, right? Didn't you do?
I want to know something.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to flash all the way forward to like what the view is like on the top of the mountain. I mean, you're blazing. Honestly, you are blazing trails for your peers. You're top of the world with acting, with directing, with producing, just smashing ceilings all over the place. I mean, do you have perspective on that? And I know it probably makes you uncomfortable to admit it or address it, but it really is, super impressive what's going on.
Very, yeah.
Oh, thanks, guys. Do I have perception on it? No, I really don't, actually. I just am here. I don't know. I'm not kidding when I say when you've committed to making Hollywood your place of employment. I mean, as you guys all know, I mean, what else are we supposed to do? Right. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, it's frightening.
You get to the point of no return. You're like, well, I have no other skill set. I know no other people. I haven't done anything else. Like, these are all the people I know. They create things and we put them out into the world. And so I just thought, well, how else can I take advantage of all these dim dongs that I've met along the way?
Right.
Like, what else can we do? You know?
I'm one of those guys who shocker, I love Pitch Perfect, right?
Mm-hmm. Who doesn't?
And one of the greatest signs that your movie is a classic and stands the test of time is that when you see it and when you're scrolling through the guide, you have to flip it on and watch wherever it is in the movie, and you just sit there and watch it. And I do that every single time I see that movie and any sequel of it. And so, but what is the genesis of Pitch Perfect? How did it come about? How did you get involved? Like, what's the story of that from idea to script to screen? And then the second one too.
Wow, thank you, Sean. My husband, who's my business partner, my partner in all things, Max, you guys have all met Max.
Yep.
Max wrote a book about fantasy football, which before fantasy football was really a big deal, he wrote a book about fantasy football. And through that, he met a really fun book agent, and he was out to drinks with a book agent in New York who said, yeah, I've just moved over to this imprint. We're doing these silly books. And I think I'm going to put together this book about college a cappella. It's called Pitch Perfect. Yeah. And Max started laughing because a cappella was a really big thing at Penn where we went to school.
Oh, really?
And yeah, there was like 10 groups. They were overwhelmed.
Of course there was.
Exactly.
Of course there was.
It's a little too much a cappella.
Of course there was.
Exactly. So, and my husband has Will's attitude, which is, I mean, that those people take it so seriously. Yeah, like, it's already going to be funny.
Did you see that documentary about Everything Was Akka? Like, you guys, I'm really Akka mad at you. I could be, I, you know what? I, they use it as an adverb.
No way.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. They use Akka for everything. So, you know, it was like Dodgeball. Remember, was one of you in that movie?
Jason was.
I'm not sure.
Jason was in the blackout when he made that.
Yeah. That was actually during a lunch hour while we were shooting Arrested Development.
Yeah,
truly. No, that's true. Right. You were the commentator, right? Like I was a
Cotton or Skeeter or some crazy. Know.
You were Akka great.
Yes.
So we like Dodgeball was actually a good model for pitch in that it's about a group of people who take something very seriously that should never be taken as seriously as they take it, right? And the coming together of a group, and it's really a sports movie kind of dressed up. It's a comedy dressed up in a sports movie dressed up in a musical is what Pitch Perfect is. And so we got this book proposal that Mickey Rapkin wrote. He was a writer at GQ at the time, and he'd actually interviewed me for GQ like 2 weeks before or something. So that kind of synchronicity, I always find like it's like a signpost in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you should mm-hmm. probably do this because you've just had a signpost. And we actually didn't get the whole town. Somebody else had the book proposal as well. And somehow we got Universal. And so we took it out and we needed a writer. And I had just started doing 30 Rock. Will knows about that. Yep. And Kay Cannon was one of the writers in 30 Rock. And I was Brilliant. Friends with Jason, her then husband. They're no longer together. Lots of things have happened in Hollywood yep. with yep. all of these people.
Kay Cannon, who went on to make Blockers. She's yes. now a director
and now
in her
Cinderella.
Own right.
She's now a director Cinderella. Too. Exactly.
She's an incredible funny writer and yeah.
So funny. So she was one of Tina Fey's like proteges on 30 Rock at the time. And they had made a cappella jokes on 30 Rock. So I knew that she knew. And so we ended up, I called her and I was like, have you ever heard of a cappella? She's literally, I think she went, oh, on the phone and started singing. And I knew we had found it. And she came to our house in LA from New York. We sat around the dining room table. We put together a pitch. And we went out with it.
Perfect.
And we sold it. And that's what happened.
That's amazing.
Was there
that's
ever amazing. A moment yeah. when you were going to play one of the singer girls?
No. I never... We wrote the role that I play in the movie. We wrote for Kristen Wiig, actually. We
oh,
wrote
really?
For Wiig and probably one of you guys. And then and I ended up doing it with John Michael Higgins because I had worked with with Michael yeah. Higgins. Yeah.
So funny.
And he was doing the Chris Guest stuff that he does is yes. like a great template for your stuff too.
Absolutely. And he did one of the greatest improvs that I'd ever seen live, like in reality. We were on the set of a very not good movie called Fred Claus.
yep.
Vince Vaughn starred in that movie and 5 Oscar winners, just yeah. so if we're counting. And wow. And then me and John Michael again. So we were making this movie and the scene was Vince and John Michael Higgins in a bar, and Vince started improvising about teaching John Michael Higgins how to woo me. Which is what happens in the movie. And so
there's not a lot of people better than Vince at this, what yeah. you're about to say, but John matched
Vince
him.
Does this, so Vince does this whole thing that, so it starts like this. He's like, listen, buddy, you're in a Mexican standoff with this woman and you gotta bring her to the table and you gotta figure out how to like get it on, blah, 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 blah. And you know how he goes, he just goes on and on in the Vince way that he does is genius and everything and whatever. And he kind of pauses. And John Michael Higgins, like, looks back at me. I'm off camera, like, over here. Looks back at me and turns back and he goes, gosh, she does not look Mexican.
He did not yes That's and funny. It. Did Vince pick up the ball there or did he just say, well, you just ruined the bit.
I think.
You ruined the improv.
We kind of all fell out, honestly. The whole crew fell out. I mean, it was just the perfect, it was like he held it, you know, in improv when you grab it and you hold it and you go like, where's my opening? And he just held on to it the whole time and he dropped it right at the exact moment.
Right now, Tracy's nodding.
Yeah. Perfect yeah. setup.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know what exactly mean. What that means. Yeah.
Oh, it was beautiful.
That's really cool. That's such a great story.
Waiting for the perfect yeah. joke. Sorry.
So here's the other thing that you may be surprised or not surprised. So Scotty, my husband Scotty and I, we love...
Wait, what?
Yeah, he's gay.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Elizabeth, Sean's gay.
Well, yeah. Can we pause our record for 1 second?
Yeah. Yeah.
So we like game shows. We're old people who like game shows. We watch stuff all night long, and you know, and it goes without saying, we watch you and Press Your Luck all the time because we just can't get enough. And you're so great on it, and we love it. And I want to ask you, what made you want to do it? Because you're so good at it. And also, what do you think about this trend of big talent like yourself doing game shows like Will Arnett, Jamie Foxx, Alec Baldwin, yourself? It's a lot of people are doing these, and it all works. Like, I love all of them.
I actually was inspired partly by Will and when he did relaunch the show, which was
the Gong Show.
I was on, the Gong Show, and I was on, and
very kindly.
The Mike Myers of it all was so incredible. I feel like we could tell stories about that.
Spoiler alert.
Years. That was pretty wild.
Mike Myers was disguised as the host. Yeah,
was there ever an episode when he pulled the mask off, like dug his finger into the prosthetic and peeled
it off?
No, and
it was so cool because we were like, obviously we thought it would be great to get Mike. And then he was like, I'll do it, but I want to do it in this character. And Sony's like, he wants to do it in the character. I'm like, yeah.
Yes,
great.
Yes. That's great.
Fucking say how I can't say yes hard enough. Yes, let's go. But they were all really cool. And at ABC, where you do your show too, they were all really cool about it. And of course, I got to feel like at some point, people are going to look back and go, you know, Mike Myers hosted a game show in character. And everybody's going to go, what?
No, right.
Nobody's making a big deal, enough big deal. Anyway. So you did come and do it very graciously. Came and did it. We're awesome and participated in that. And then, but you were already talking to them about doing Press Your Luck at that point.
Well, I was talking to them about doing a Name That Tune and like rebooting Name That Tune, which didn't end up coming to fruition. But then
it's out now. Yeah, but yeah.
And now, yeah, not with me though.
Right.
Yeah. We started talking about it. And then, Pressure Luck came along. I loved Pressure Luck growing up. It was
so
like, I was a latchkey kid. So to go home after school and like get to watch the No Whammy thing. And
same.
I loved it. So I was already a fan. And I went to work. I remember the first day, I really didn't know what to totally expect. I was in the same block. I was told, you're going to be in a block with Alec Baldwin and Steve Harvey. And me and Pressure Luck. And I love those two gentlemen and I love their shows. And I thought, okay, well, that's pretty good. I'm not the loser in that. And I went to work the first day. We shoot like three shows a day. It's exhausting.
Yeah.
And I came home and I was in the shower, I remember, and my husband came in and he was like, how was it? And
you're like, I'm naked. Can we talk about this later?
I'm in the shower, for fuck's sake.
I was naked. Guys, minutes? We had a conversation about Pressure Luck while I was naked in the shower.
Wow.
And I was started crying in the shower. And I was like, it was the most amazing day of my life.
Oh, that's great.
We had given away like $700,000 to a bunch of people whose lives were completely and utterly changed.
Yeah.
By game show money. Like you, I think you forget when you're watching it, the real people that show up, that like
that.
Go through the motions to get there and
that
are hoping
part.
To win.
Yeah.
And then like, you're like, here you go. Here's a car and a bunch of money.
I cry at that shit. I cry
totally.
At like people winning all that money. It's
Has
so great.
Has anyone ever done a follow up on how that all went for these folks? This life changing influx of money? Yeah.
We do. Everything gets tweeted and Instagrammed and all that. So we had this one contestant, No Whammy for Pammy. Maybe Sean remembers. Pam was a big Cher fan.
Okay.
And we gave her an all expenses paid private jet to Vegas, three Cher nights in a row.
Good Lord.
I saw that show. Cher it's an unbelievable show.
Yeah, she's great.
And this woman lost her mind. She got to bring her friends. She also won a guest wardrobe because that was her favorite clothes. And so she wore her guest clothes and went to Cher and like posted it all. It was amazing.
That's
all she ever wanted in life was to go see Cher on a private jet with her friends. And like, we were like,
and
here
that
you
all
go.
Happened.
Yeah, you make it happen. It's incredible. I absolutely love hosting a game show.
I love
it. It's one of my favorite things.
So that's interesting. Now, is there something
Thank
that you...
Thank you for watching, Sean Hayes.
Of course, I love it. Is there something that you kind of, you know, it seems like you've been immersed into the world of Hollywood, like you said at the beginning, where it's once you're in it, it's like, what else do I do? I don't have any other skills. Is there anything you always wanted to do or that you are still want to do? Or is it 24/7 Hollywood directing, producing? Like, you just love it so much.
I mean, I don't know that I love it so much.
Yeah. But it's the only thing.
Is it your everything?
I know. Sean really made it out like Hollywood should just be loved up. Like,
no, I just meant like
I'm rubbing up on it all the time, every night.
No, just because of your journey from school to then getting a master's to then New York to just working all the time. Is your life fulfilled in that way? Is kind of what I meant. Or is there more that you've always wanted to do?
I mean, I'm one of those people, I feel like you guys are, I mean, why did you start this podcast? You know, it's like, what else is there to do?
Yeah, there's that.
Honestly, we're all very similarly aged too. I have come to the point in my life where I'm like, all right, I mean, 50 more years. Like, what are we doing now for the rest of it? Yeah. Like, you know?
Right.
This episode is sponsored by CarMax. You know what? I love my car. Do you love your car? We have relationships with our cars, don't we? Just ask Stephen King. Remember Christine? Anyway, they are with us through good times and bad, but like any relationship, it can run out of gas. Get it? But you know what? Just like any relationship, sometimes it's you. Maybe you got a new job and you're moving on, right? Sometimes it can be the car. Maybe it's not giving you the space you need. But no matter why the joy has gone out of your ride, our friends at CarMax make it super easy to say goodbye. With online offers in 2 minutes or less at CarMax.com. Just enter your license plate, answer a few simple questions at CarMax.com, and you'll instantly get an offer that's good for 7 days. These are real offers, people, not estimates, leaving you plenty of time to shop around and consider your options. And the folks at CarMax will buy your car even if you don't buy one of theirs. It's pretty sweet. So whether you're trading it at the dealer or selling off and moving on, start with an offer from CarMax and know where you stand. Learn more and get your offer today at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way it should be. This episode of SmartList is brought to you by Bourbon Time. You know, guys, we've talked about this quite a lot on our show, but the loss of our commutes between work and home this past year has transformed how we divide our days between being at work and relaxing at home. It's easy to feel burnt out without a change of scenery, you know, as you move from work to home. That used to be my time to recharge and wind down after a long day on set or working anywhere. My friends at Maker's Mark have a solution for the exhaustion we're all feeling. Beat the burnout. Take back the hour of 6 to 7 p.m. as your me time, where you do whatever it is that makes you feel grounded and refreshed. For me and Scotty, sometimes we like to go in the backyard and hang out just as the sun's setting around that time, 6 to 7 p.m., and kick back with a Maker's Mark in our hands and conversations in our mouths. It's yummy, it's smooth, it's creamy, and it's silky. It's perfect. This year, we're kicking burnout to the curb. Join me in reclaiming 6 to 7 p.m. as the happiest hour so you can do whatever it is that makes you happy. And if that involves a glass of bourbon, remember to drink Maker's Mark responsibly. Maker's Mark Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey, 45% alcohol by volume, copyright 2021 Maker's Mark Distillery Incorporated, Loretta, Kentucky.
This episode of SmartList is brought to you by McDonald's.
So, listen, I want to take a moment to talk about my favorite McDonald's item. I don't think you're going to be able to guess it, so I'm just going to cut you off before you say anything, Jason.
Filet-O-Fish.
No, but I do like that, too. No, it's the Quarter Pounder with cheese.
That's my favorite, too.
Yeah.
That's my favorite, too.
Is it?
I like the pickle.
You're not just saying, okay, you're not just saying that because you want to be just like me?
No, I'm not. My order would always be Quarter Pounder with cheese, large fries, hot apple pie, Diet Coke. Let's do it. Sometimes a little sidecar of McNuggets. I mean, I can't fathom going to McDonald's and not ordering the QPC or Quarter Pounder with cheese. That's an example of a bad idea, like going for a run when it's really hot outside.
Sure.
Or making a podcast with Will Arnett and Sean Hayes.
Hey, hey, man.
Yeah. So,
you can just tell people to treat themselves to their own Quarter Pounder with cheese today and you know, come on, reward yourself with some fries too while you're at it. You could just say that. You don't need to disparage me, man.
That sounds like a great idea. Look, McDonald's, just talking about this, it's making us crave it.
Fresh beef available at most restaurants in contiguous U.S., not available in Alaska, Hawaii, and U.S. territories.
And now back to the show.
Do you guys ever let your imagination go to that whenever that fork was in your life, you know, whether it was college or before or a little bit after, where you could pick where you're going to kind of put your energy? And if you could switch that and point it somewhere else, what was close to maybe going to be your career? Or if you could go back knowing what you know now and what you love now, would you have put your energies into architecture or politics or anything that's even remotely interesting to you that can compare?
Nope. No. Nothing. No. I think being a storyteller is an incredible job. And I love it. And I remember being taught in college that storytelling, you know, that it's the oldest form. It's not just entertainment, but like, you know, they used to sit around the fire in the caves and someone would get up and be the storyteller and be like, there's lions and this is how you avoid that. You know, it's literally like why we are humans is because we have storytelling. Because we have imaginations, because we create characters, right? And so, to me, it's such a gift of a job to do every day. It's incredible.
Right, but if that guy who got up, he's telling a story, if he falls over into the fire, he burns himself, he's going to have to sue the guy that didn't put the rock wall up high. Who's going to represent him? So, you know, lawyers came around and, you know,
that's
eventually
right.
Things filled out. Yep.
That's right. We had to fill out civilization around that particular guy. I just mean to say, like, it's an old tradition and it's being carried on by all of us. And it's a fun responsibility, I think. And I don't take it too seriously, as you guys know. I really am just trying to entertain people at the end of the day.
I would say, one of my favorite things about you is that how you don't take it, and you mentioned that, and or yourself too seriously. And it's always one of the most sort of, it's almost disarming how sort of open and genuine you are as a person. I always sort of forget, because you do, as Jason said, you do have this incredible career and you've done so many amazing things. And then anytime I spend any time with you, I'm always like, oh God, you're so down earth and so normal and so funny. And I felt comfortable enough to let you in on when I was on the dating app and everything. And we remember that whole thing when you checked up to see how it was going.
Let's pull over here for a second. So there you are so you're on Raya and you swipe and you see Liz Banks on there and you're like,
no, things not going well with Max. The story's better. I was living vicariously through Will. He was getting to be on dating apps.
Sure.
Raya being the main one.
Okay.
And I was like, I want to look at some of these ladies. I want to swipe. And one of the things I found fascinating was how every dating profile is the same. So like every girl is like in a bikini but eating a pizza, or like holding a dog. They're like always like in bed under the covers but with a dog.
Sure.
Like they're all the same.
Like there's no bad ideas. Yeah.
And they're all listed like their job, and they're all philanthropists too. They're all like, well, and all the dudes say that they're philanthropists because what they're trying to say is like, I got a lot of dough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, every guy's with a kid, but it's usually like, look at, I'm a great uncle, you know, so it's like, you're great with kids, but you're hot, but your abs are out, but you eat pizza, but you love animals, but you're cool, and you lay in bed, and you'll like a photo, and you have messy hair, like, it was amazing.
It's amazing. We went on this trip to promote the second Lego movie, and it was me and Liz and
Chris Pratt.
Well, Chris Pratt and Corden. James
Corden.
Yeah.
When you guys went to space camp?
Yeah, we went to space camp.
Oh my God, I saw that. And that was hilarious.
And so we're there. First of all, I don't know if you remember this. So Corden says, I was like, I had the app open. I'd just gotten it. And I was like, okay. And there, you could kind of message to people who you matched with or whatever. And Corden said, whatever happens in this next one, you have to message exactly what I say. Do you remember that?
So I was like,
okay. So Corden says, this girl's like, hey, how's it going? And he's like, you have to answer, well, I just stepped off a helicopter, so it's going pretty well. So put that in there. Can you imagine being on the receiving end of this girl being like, okay,
what?
You dick.
That's right. Oh, God. I'm in Ireland right now, you guys.
What?
Right now?
I forgot to mention.
You're in Ireland right now?
You guys, I live in a cottage by the Irish Sea. Like, that's...
What is going on?
Wait, did you just...
Okay, you guys, I'm making a movie called Cocaine Bear.
Yes. You're making Cocaine Bear. Yes.
Making Cocaine Bear.
Have you started shooting yet? Are you in pre-production?
No, I'm in prep. We start shooting in August. Yeah.
Are you directing this?
Directing it?
I am. Yeah. I'm directing the movie, producing the movie.
Oh, that's great. Who's in it? What's it about?
It's based on a true story, Sean. This is an incredible story. Okay. About an infamous drug runner whose whole MO was that he would drop drugs out of an airplane, like a Cessna that he would fly up from Colombia with coke in it. He would drop it over fields to get picked up along the East Coast. And then he would parachute out of the plane and then dump the plane into the Atlantic Ocean.
Wow.
So, you know, they would do drug runs worth like hundreds of millions of dollars. And these Cessnas are like $2 million planes. So it was cost of doing business. They would get rid of the plane. So if anybody had tracked it or whatever, it's the equivalent of like lighting the car on fire with it, where the crime had occurred. And he was able to do this because he was a paratrooper in the Army and he had a whole special set of skills. And so one day, you guys will love this story. He flew the plane back from Colombia. He had brought to Colombia his karate instructor, and the two of them had parrot while they were in Colombia. They were sick on the plane. They were puking everywhere. They decided they needed to ditch this plane, and the karate instructor jumped out and landed and was fine, and then Andrew C. Thornton II, the infamous drug runner, jumped out, apparently hit his head on the plane, never deployed his chute. His emergency chute deployed. He ended up dead on the ground, surrounded by drugs, with like Gucci loafers. This was all in 1985. And the police and the mob suddenly were like, he just dropped a bunch of drugs. Because the police never had any clues about where he'd done anything. So now he falls from the sky and they're like, we got to go find the bags of drugs. And they never found the drugs, actually. And we don't know if the mob picked it up or what happened. But 3 months later, they found a black bear in the Chattahoochee National Forest in Georgia, surrounded by bags of drugs. And he had died from a massive drug overdose. He had eaten $17 million worth of cocaine.
The bear.
The bear did.
The bear did. Yeah. Oh my and he's God. Now, and that, he's now.
That bear was called Jason Bateman.
There are a lot of jokes about who the Cocaine Bear was in 1985. It definitely could have been Bateman.
Are you in the movie too or just directing?
No, I'm just going to direct it.
And who's in it?
Ray Liotta plays the mob boss.
Oh my God, I love Ray Liotta.
Yeah. Carrie Russell plays
the Love Carrie Russell, I love Carrie.
I love
She's
her.
So good.
She's one of my all-time faves.
Yeah. Oh, a delightful human. Delightful.
Did you work with her, Will?
I did. I know her very well. She's a good friend. Say hi to her for me, please.
I will. I know. I love her and Matthew.
Matthew's a great guy, too, yeah.
All great. Jesse Tyler Ferguson, I think, is going to be
fantastic.
Because we're very old friends.
He's hilarious.
Alden Ehrenreich is going to be in the movie. You know, he was Han Solo.
Sure.
Oh, sure. He's fantastic. Sure. I love him.
Very good actor. Yeah.
Yeah, amazing. Sure.
So it's got a really fun cast. Then a bunch of young kids. It's like a bunch of young kids that go
That's
into the
fun.
Movie. It seems like a kid's movie. Yeah.
Very Stand By Me, this movie, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
God, so Liz, you're off doing this movie, this Cocaine Bear. I heard about this. Yeah. I'm so excited. I told you before, I just think the world of you. I just think that you're just so funny and cool. And
here comes the
but. There's no but. I was going to say, I just want to do something. I want to be at your disposal at some point. I want you to tell me, I want you to direct a movie with me, not Sean Jason, not with Sean and Jason. I just want to be a supporting character. I just want to be there to have
Sean
fun.
Sean and I are holding out for a Pitch Perfect 3. Is 3 on its way?
I think there was a 3.
3 happened.
3 is 4.
Is 4. Let me finish. Is 4 on its way?
4.
Maybe.
We'll make a deal right now.
I'll self-tape right now.
Make a deal.
I think we're self-taping.
This is self-tape. This is it. We're self-taping right now.
Sing right now, Jason. Sing for real.
I sing the body electric.
Which was a song that was great and wonderful because if we don't talk about a song, we have to pay for it. So that's a fantastic song.
It's
something else from Fame. And
what
fame
is the
such
song?
A wonderful thing.
Stop singing and start talking. What is the song?
That song is from, is that from Hair?
No, that's from Fame.
Fame.
That's what I meant. Yep. By the way, hey, how about you remake Fame? I remember that. Irene Cara, right? Was that Alan Parker?
I remember that.
Was that Alan Parker?
Oh, that's so...
Why don't you remake Fame?
You have no idea what a great segue that is because I talk about Fame on my podcast, My Body, My Podcast, exclusively on Audible. And they... Because Fame, literally rocked my life when I saw Fame in so many ways. Yeah. And not because it was about a group of people who like really wanted to pursue the dream to live in the arts, to work in the arts. It was
people who wanted to live forever, who wanted to learn how to fly.
Exactly. Yeah. Not because of those things, even though I was inspired. No, it was because Irene Cara is Topples in that movie. I don't know if you guys remember that part.
Oh, we do.
No,
I never knew that.
Well, there was always the TV version that I feel like we got to watch. I got to watch it on HBO back in the day when HBO was like a new thing.
I was old enough. I was in the theater.
My family could never afford HBO, but we would get the free weekends, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure it was on one of the free weekends. So I watched it. And Irene Cara is topless, and I do an entire podcast about this. I'm not joking.
Every episode is about Fame?
Yeah. It's about Irene Cara specifically. I was being bullied back then. I was really skinny and I was very behind in puberty. I still am.
It's coming along nicely.
It never, this is the whole point. They never came along.
Your voice still hasn't dropped.
They never came along. And I was being bullied by this girl named Erica, and she heard the insult that she hurled at me after school when she would bully me on the way home was, "You're going to have cone boobs." And I didn't know what that meant. Madonna's like
Madonna truth or dare.
Come out. Yeah, that wasn't a thing. I didn't know what a cone shaped boob was at the time. Because I just looked at Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition. Those were all round. Nobody had cones in Sports Illustrated.
Yeah.
And then I saw Irene Cara, and she had, I don't know, I haven't seen her body in a very long time, but in Fame, when she was topless, she had some very adorable small breasts that were a little conical. And I kind of freaked out. I was like, that's what the bully means. Yeah. And I was like, that's gonna be me. And at the time, those were unacceptable boobs. Do you know what really? I mean?
Yeah, but wait, why? Like, I mean, what? Why?
Well, all boobs are gorgeous. It makes no sense. It's so dumb. It makes no sense. Of course, everybody's gorgeous. Everybody beautiful. And so that the podcast really is about how, like, why these things seep into our brains and why we get this messaging that, like, you should look like the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Right,
and
right.
I've never been able to fill out that bikini top.
You're doing okay.
You guys, then my very first big movie that you mentioned was What Had American Summer. I show up and David Wayne's like, "We wear this bikini?" And I'm like, "I guess." And I put it on. And then the first agent I ever met in LA, not because I had a New York agent, as I said, when I went to LA and I interviewed this agent, I won't name him, but he was like, "Have you ever thought about getting a boob job?"
Uh-oh.
Oh, Lord.
Wow.
Is he still in the business?
Yeah, he is.
He's still in the business?
Wow. And I was like, well, the gig's kind of up because I made this movie, What Had American Summer, that I'm sure tons and tons of people are going to see. By the way, no one saw that movie for like 20 years. So I was like, everyone's going to see this movie and I'm already in a bikini top. So like now I think it would be weird if I like suddenly like pop a D cup after just showing off these little babies.
Times is going to write a story
about it. Exactly. Yeah. Like it's going to become a thing and I can't have that happen. Meanwhile, all I was thinking to myself was, no, I'm not having surgery and I don't know why we're talking about it.
Fucking kidding. We live in such a fucking...
But yeah.
It's not even just Hollywood. It's just this environment we live in. I have like body dysmorphia myself.
Show us your cones. Will, can we see your cones?
Anyway, Fame.
Fame. Remake it.
Fame.
No, don't remake it.
No, it's perfect.
No, don't remake it.
It's perfect.
But don't you think that, like, you know, for people who hold on to things like that, obviously that had an effect on you and somebody said that to you and you held on to it for such a long time. Isn't it funny at some point, at some age, I don't know what it is, where you go, why was I holding on? Like, who gives a shit about any of that?
I know.
Who cares? I like me. I like my body. Whatever I have.
But it's hard.
I mean, Sean, luckily you hit fuck it like 15 years ago, right?
I hit fuck it. I'm still working on fuck it, but I'm almost there.
Oh, by the way, I remember one of the first places I went on the Warner Brothers lot. I was walked past all of your Porsches on Will and Grace.
Yeah, how about
and
that?
And I was like,
people didn't hate us already. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. But I thought, man, that's the life.
I sold mine right away.
That was like 19. 19-
yeah.
Sean sold his, but it was like 1999.
Yeah, just to give, Will and Grace became a hit. The same thing happened to Will and Grace's happened to Friends, which was we became a hit when they had reruns over the second summer. So network recognized this and to award us, reward us. They gave us like four Porsches for the cast members. Wow. And then you're like, oh, wow, it's incredible. And then you add up how much it costs for an ad in the USA Today. And it was to buy us four Porsches was cheaper than an ad. And we got more press from getting the cars.
Yeah, of course. I always said to our friend who ran to Silverman when he ran NBC, I was like, go back to giving dumb actors cars because it's way less than a fucking raise and they're going to thank you forever. And every time you negotiate, they're going to say like, yeah, but Ben was kind of nice to me. So I don't want to push it.
You gave me that car that time.
I must say though, it was a very nice, generous thing, but
Sean, I remember when you got those Porsches and as actors, I was in the same position. I was living in New York, kind of coming out to LA to work when I could and whatever. And, and they're like, and then I got a pilot. I was on a show and you guys were on the air. And I did a show for, like, we got canceled after two airings called The Mike O'Malley Show. So we were at the upfront with you guys. We're like,
love Mike.
Yeah, the Mike's the best. And, Mike, first of all, just a second for Mike O'Malley, one of the all-time greats.
Boston Strong.
Was this a moment of silence? Is he not with us anymore?
He's a mensch's mensch. But anyway,
he really is.
we were at the upfront, and you guys were the toast of the upfront, Sean, Will and Grace. I don't think we've ever talked about this. And I was like, oh, man. And then somebody's like, they all got Porsches. I was like, oh, man. And then they go, Porsche Boxsters. And I was like, eh. Yeah. I swear to God. I had nothing. I didn't have a fucking pot to piss in. And I was like,
To be clear, though, I couldn't pay my rent at that moment. Even after, you know, we made it through one season. I was like, oh, I can kind of pay my rent now a little bit. And then we get this. It's like, no, I'm not holding on to this. I'm selling mine immediately so I can pay my rent for the next year in case this doesn't get picked up. What do I need two cars for? Thank you. It's very appreciative. But I'd rather a raise or something. I don't need a car.
No, you were still on a commercial. I remember you were still on a Bud Light commercial while you were on Will and Grace.
Yeah, I have Super Bowl.
That's a true story.
Super Bowl.
I have to say, I went to a taping of Will and Grace. And Yeah, and I tell people about it all the time. You know, when people are like, what makes a great TV show? I'm like, the actors have to be fucking great.
You're so sweet.
They have to be written for their special thing, and then they have to have amazing chemistry. Like, it's not easy. It's what you guys had on Arrested Development, too, but...
Yeah, for sure.
You guys were maestros. I mean, it helps to have Jim Bros there.
Yeah.
But, man, you guys were... So it was magic to watch.
That's so sweet. Did we meet?
Worked together. The four of you worked together.
Sean, you were fucking great on that show. No, you really, really were.
That's very sweet. I appreciate
so
you guys.
So funny.
Everyone was kind. Virtuosic.
That's very nice.
I feel
the same way about everybody talking here today.
I would. Yeah. I'm dying to do another sitcom.
Let's miss that
routine and the audience and the. Oh
same.
My God, is
I think
that
we're kind of doing one. It's called Smart List.
Why don't we just be the four of us? Let's
do a sitcom next year.
Hit record.
We have taken, we've taken up way too much of your time.
You got an industry to uphold, you know? I mean...
Here's what I want to say. I want to say thank you for dressing up for your other thing that you had today and keeping it on for
keeping
us.
Keeping it on.
Instead of changing into
pajamas. That's a great point.
You look
gorgeous.
And you
kept your hair on, too. Yeah. I've seen you bald. It's not fun.
No.
The wig is beautiful today.
For you guys. Thank you so much. This one's named Doris. I think Doris is the winner.
She's so pretty.
You guys are the best.
Thank you, Elizabeth. You're the best.
We love you.
Love you guys.
Say hi to Max.
Thank you.
Love you.
I will. Bye. You guys too. Bye.
Oh, man. I've been waiting for her to come on.
Yeah, she's great. I love her.
She's the best.
You know what I love about her is she's the perfect example of picking something when you're younger that you're drawn to and you follow it through. You're inevitably going to be successful the earlier you pick the thing that you love, right?
I suppose.
And she went to high school, college, all of those things, master's degree. So of course she's successful because she knew she wanted to do it from day one.
We didn't even really talk about what a successful director she is about her experience directing, because we were talking so much about her. We were so into her life. She has so many layers that you're just like, yeah, I want to hear more about that.
She's also just got a great spirit. You just want, like, I just found myself just listening to her, not wanting to cut her off, as I've got a bad habit of doing. She knows how to keep a conversation going, and she's infectious. Yeah. I really like, and plus the fact, I mean, that what Max and she has done with the 29-year marriage, I think, is like incredible. That's really awesome. Hard thing to do, specifically in this business. We spend so much time away from one another. I think that can't be overlooked either. And they work together.
What do you love about that?
They work together. What the continuity of
the
it
marriage,
all?
Yeah.
The marriage is that that it's...
Why is that important to you?
Oh, God.
Don't make me cry, Will.
No, you tell me why it's fucking important to you.
Because it's hard to do nowadays?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know.
Don't look at me. I never pulled it off.
The fact that they've been together for so long and that they work together as well, and it's just they're fun to hang out with, those two. They got it figured out.
I love her. She's so great.
Yeah.
All right.
Boy, how do we bicoastal? Work a buy-in bicoastal? To this? Bicoastal, no.
No, we can't. You can't workshop it.
Can you hear my thoughts right now?
We could also change it up and not Dubai anymore.
Oh, you know what? That reminds me. There's a great place to visit if you ever get out past the Middle East called Dubai. Did you just said?
Oh, for fuck!
We almost made it.
We were so close. We almost pull it off. Bye, the skin of our teeth.
Oh, there you got it. You saved it.
Woo.
Bye, the skin of our teeth.
Smartless is published and distributed with Simplecast.